Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. You know, in this society, so many people just go through life basically on an ad hoc basis, following more or less what comes easy rather than thinking ahead, especially as intelligent Christians, about how we ought to strategize. I want to ask you a very serious question today. We are just a few days out from the most hectic period of the Christmas buying season, the Christmas concert season, the Christmas service season. What is your strategy as a family? What's your philosophy as a family for dealing with Christmas? I don't mean what's your tradition. Not that I'm uninterested. That's just not the topic for today. What is your philosophy? What's your strategy? How do you decide how you're going to plan Christmas? I think this is especially important when you think about children and teenagers. How is it that you as a family are planning what you're doing for Christmas? I don't just mean planning what you're going to buy or planning what you're going to do, but how are you planning Christmas as a very special season from a Christian perspective in terms of the life of your family? The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I think it's important perhaps this early in the season we have a conversation like this because it might encourage some people who've never thought this way to think maybe we really do need to take a little time away, maybe mom and dad, family, and just say, what is our strategy for thinking about dealing with Christmas? The phone number, 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. First to review some issues in the news. The Washington Post is reporting that scientists have come up with a way of curing sickle cell anemia in mice using the very newly announced breakthrough technology by which pluripotent stem cells have been created out of human skin cells without the use of an embryo. In other words, with no ethical complication from the use of human embryos and thus the destruction of human embryos, this new technology, which we talked about in recent days, allows for pluripotent stem cells to be nonetheless retrieved. And now, already, scientists are indicating that they have developed a treatment using what are known as iPS cells that can reverse an inherited, potentially fatal disease, this disease being sickle cell anemia. Now, reading from the Washington Post report, it says the new experiment created with the removal of a few skin cells from the tail lips of sick mice with sickle cell anemia can cause painful circulatory problems, kidney failure, and strokes. The researchers converted these skin cells into stem cells by infecting them with viruses engineered to change the cell's gene activity so they would resemble embryonic cells. That's really exciting. And in the midst of all of that language is the fact that not only have we in just recent weeks had this breakthrough in stem cell technology, now there's already a breakthrough in terms of the therapeutic application. Now, not in human beings yet, at this point in mice, but the reversal of a disease like sickle cell anemia could hold tremendous promise for an increase in human health and happiness. And for that reason, it should be celebrated. And once again, we need to celebrate the fact that this particular technique involves no destruction, nor even the involvement of a human embryo. News coming out of Rhode Island indicates that a lesbian couple who married in Massachusetts now cannot get divorced in Rhode Island. The state's highest court ruled just today that the state lacks the authority to grant a divorce because state lawmakers have not defined marriage as anything other than between a man and a woman. The decision was split 3-2, but it comes down to the fact that Cassandra Ormiston and Margaret Chambers wed in Massachusetts in 2004 after that state became the first to legalize same-sex marriage. The couple filed for divorce last year, according to the Boston Globe. They filed for divorce in Rhode Island, where they both live. They were citing irreconcilable differences. But now they've been told that if they are going to get divorced, they're going to have to go to Massachusetts to get divorced. Again, the Boston Globe reports Massachusetts is the only state where gay marriage is legal, but it restricts the unions to residents of states where the marriage would be recognized. A Massachusetts judge last year decided neighboring Rhode Island was one of those states because no law specifically bans the marriages there. But the courts and legislature in Rhode Island have not taken any action to recognize those unions. Now, this shows several things simultaneously. Number one, it shows just how out of step Massachusetts is with the rest of the country now in terms of marriage law. because so far as I know, this is the only situation in which anyone married in one state would not be allowed to divorce in another. But it comes down to the fact that if they are same-sex couples, they would be unable to marry in terms of legal marriage in any of these other states as well. We'll be tracking that with you. It was, after all, a 3-2 decision, and undoubtedly this will continue to be an issue there in Rhode Island as in other parts of the nation. The Episcopal Diocese of San Joaquin in California, that's in central California, the San Joaquin Valley, is expected to vote to secede from the Episcopal Church U.S. on Saturday, that is tomorrow. And, according to the Washington Times, it is expected to be the first diocese in the country to do so after civil war has erupted among Episcopalians over biblical authority and the ordination of an openly homosexual bishop. Now, three other dioceses, Pittsburgh, Fort Worth, and Quincy, Indiana, have all signaled also their intent to depart. Also, news has come that four Episcopal bishops have left the denomination for the Roman Catholic Church. Now, again, this comes back to a threat from, and by the way, not acknowledged as a threat, a message of concern from the presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church USA, that is Catherine Jeffords Shorey. A December 3rd letter from the presiding bishop was sent to the diocese there in San Joaquin. It said, quote, "I do not need to remind you of the potential consequences. If you continue along this path, I believe it will be necessary to ascertain whether you have in fact abandoned the communion of this church and violated your vows to uphold doctrine, discipline, and worship of this church." That letter was from presiding bishop Catherine Jeffords Shorey to the San Joaquin bishop David John Schofield. Similar letters, of course, have been sent to bishops such as Robert Duncan in Pittsburgh, where similar decisions were made. It will be very interesting to see now how all of this comes down. And it's just a reminder to us that what was set loose in the Episcopal Church USA with the 2003 election and consecration of an openly homosexual bishop has now come full to the point of boil. And it will not be long until these issues find themselves not only in the front pages of the papers, but necessarily, inevitably, also in the court dockets as well. We'll be finding out how these things go as we do look to the future. A Woods Hole biologist is claiming that he was fired because he does not believe in evolution. The Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution is one of the nation's most respected scientific institutions. The Boston Globe is reporting that a former researcher is claiming he was fired because he doesn't believe in evolution. Nathaniel Abraham filed the lawsuit in the U.S. District Court in Boston, claiming that he was dismissed by the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution in 2004 because of his Christian belief that the Bible presents a true account of human creation. David C. Gibbs, one of Mr. Abraham's attorneys, says that the Woods Hole Institute believes they have the right to insist on a belief in evolution. The Woods Hole Institution released a statement saying, quote, "The institution firmly believes that its actions and those of its employees concerning Dr. Abraham were entirely lawful and that the center does not discriminate on the basis of religion." Now, the Boston Globe report is interesting because it details correspondence between this man, who was then an employee, a research fellow at the Woods Hole Institution, and his employers. Mr. Abraham now works at Liberty University in Lynchburg, Virginia. Now, what makes this case to me very interesting is that you have someone like Eugenie Clark. She's executive director for the National Center for Science Education. She is a vociferous public defender of evolution. She says, and I quote from her statement here, "It is inconceivable that someone working in developmental biology at a major research institution would not be expected to deal intimately with evolution. A flight school hiring instructors wouldn't ask whether they accepted that the Earth was spherical. They would assume it. Similarly, Woods Hole would have assumed that someone hired to work in developmental biology would accept that evolution occurred. It's part and parcel of the science these days." End quote. You know, folks, another reminder here of the clash of worldviews, of the fact that anything significant in terms of conversation about matters related to the creation of the world, the origin of the universe, the theory of evolution, it all comes down to a battle of ideas, a clash of worldviews. And what you have on the part of evolutionary scientists is a now adamant assertion that science itself requires evolution, that if you do not affirm evolution, you simply cannot be credible in the field of science. This is filtering down in California, where you have the University of California rejecting courses taught by homeschoolers and by Christian schools in the physical sciences, the biological sciences, on the same basis. This is now also what you see with several different layers and levels of scientific research, including institutions like the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution. Also, we might mention like the Museum of Natural History at the Smithsonian simply declaring that evolution is a part of the necessary worldview for working within that organization. Now, that raises the fascinating worldview question. Since evolution does deal with theological matters, is it a violation of religious liberty? Is it itself an establishment of some kind of religion to require evolution of someone who would work within an institution, especially one with government funding? Fascinating question. We'll track with you. We'll be back to talk about a strategy, a Christian strategy for celebrating Christmas. This is the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 877-8-GOLD-101.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. This has been a pretty heavy week for us. We've taken Monday and Tuesday to talk about the release of the Golden Compass movie. By the way, it's released today. A lot of conversation about it in the media. Hopefully you feel like you have a pretty good briefing on that. I left my article up almost all week at my website in the front page just so it'd be easier for people to find it. You can find it simply by going to albertmueller.com. And also you can find the audio of our programs from Monday and Tuesday. And it'll be interesting over the weekend or so to start noticing what kind of response comes to the movie. And I just want to encourage you again to be ready to be engaged in a good conversation with someone who may have seen the movie or is talking about the movie. As Christians, not to be defensive, but rather to be very calmly and courageously ready to tell the Christian story, the story of the gospel, far more powerful story than the atheistic story of the Golden Compass. And then, of course, yesterday we were talking about what all of America seemed to be talking about, and that was the speech given by Massachusetts former Governor Mitt Romney at the George H.W. Bush Presidential Library in College Station, Texas, having to do with religion and public life, his own Mormon faith, and his political campaign. And so we talked about that yesterday. It has been not only this week, but several weeks of very heavy programs. That leads me to the very topic we have today, which is talking about a strategy for Christmas. Because as all of these issues come up, a show we might plan to hold, a conversation we might plan to have, can be postponed, and before you know it, it doesn't happen. Which is pretty much, ironically, what can happen during the Christmas holidays. You want to have perhaps a good conversation, a good opportunity to think through what you're going to do for Christmas as a family. You might want to have, even plan to have, an opportunity to rethink some of the things you do as a family, some of the practices and habits and customs you observe as a family. You might want to see, is there something that we want to add to what we do with Christmas? Is there something out of sync from a Christian, a thoughtful perspective with what we're doing? But if you don't really make it happen, then the next thing you know, you're going to be cleaning up wrapping paper on the 26th, wondering why you didn't have that conversation. So perhaps today, this program can be a prompt, a catalyst for that kind of conversation in your home. Now, let me tell you why I'm using the word strategy. You could just as easily call it a philosophy of Christmas. It's because we are human creatures of habit. And we know, first of all, how fast the time flies. It seems like we were just having Christmas, and here we are back looking at Christmas again. By the way, the Christmas celebration now takes up roughly 5 weeks. That is what we are told now in terms of the way Americans celebrate Christmas. It is about a 5-week celebration. So you're talking about almost 1/10 of the year now being focused on Christmas. It has become the most spectacularly concentrated observance in terms of the calendar here in the United States, if not in other parts of the world. So with roughly 1/10 of the year having a thematic and calendar and programmatic kind of concentration, I think we need some kind of strategy or philosophy. Now, at the first level, I guess this strategy has to answer the question, do we celebrate Christmas? And you know, there are some who didn't. The Puritans were against celebrating Christmas because of two reasons. Number one, it had fallen into abuse, in which case you had people getting drunk, you had all kinds of public bad behavior associated with Christmas. And so the Puritans said it's simply something that is out of control, and thus it won't be celebrated. The second reason why many, including some Puritans, did not celebrate Christmas is because it was considered wrong to celebrate the birth of Christ at one time of the year in a way that was in a more emphatic sense than at any other time of the year. If we are Christians, then we are celebrating the fact that God was in Christ, there incarnate in Bethlehem's stable. We should be thinking about that every day, every week, with the same emphatic sense of thanksgiving for God's provision for our salvation. So there are some who say we just opt out of Christmas. But assuming that that's not your strategy, then you have some strategy for why you do participate. Presumably, it's because as Christians you believe that it's right and proper to allow a certain time of the year, to set aside a certain time of the year when we would celebrate the birth of Christ in a way that also combines some other elements. I think this is another part of our strategy. It's called honesty. Let's be honest to say that there's no particular reason why celebrating the birth of Christ should involve giving presents to each other. There's no particular reason why celebrating the birth of Christ should involve erecting a tree in the house and putting electric lights on. There's no particular reason why celebrating the birth of Christ would mean that many people will be traveling all over the country in order to be with family. What we have done, even as Christians, is that we have combined this celebration, which after all at first was really a matter of church service, into an entire season of celebration that also includes family time, that includes the giving of gifts, that includes all kinds of activities, concerts, programs. I mean, just look at your calendar for the next few days, folks. You're going to know exactly what I'm talking about. And the intensity of the season. So I'm assuming that if you are, as Christians, celebrating Christmas, it's because at least you have a philosophy or a strategy of saying, that's what we're going to do. We're going to be a part of this. But then you really have to get to the details, and the devil, as they say, is always in the details. What kind of gift-giving is your strategy? What kind of gathering philosophy is really driving what you're doing here? What is within the proper bounds of a Christmas celebration, and what would you think to be just completely out of bounds? What kind of financial investment at Christmas makes sense to you and your family, whereas just above that or a great deal above that would just seem wrong? How do you make those decisions? The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Is there something you do in terms of your family's strategy and philosophy of Christmas that maybe some other Christians have not yet considered? Is there some special work of service or mercy that you and your family are involved in? Is there some special opportunity for Christian witness and evangelism at this time of the year? Is there something you do that perhaps other Christians should think about this Christmas season? And then when it comes especially to parents, what is your philosophy? What is your family policy or parental strategy for helping to make sure your children aren't simply caught up in all of the activity of Christmas, in all the commercialism of Christmas, and that they have some genuine understanding of why we as Christians are celebrating this season in the first place? The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're talking about a strategy for Christmas. I think if we are talking as Christians, we just have to start with the fact that anything we do during this time of the year, first of all, has to be something that would glorify God. It can't be anything less. Now, again, that has to be true of every moment of our lives, every decision of our lives. But when we're thinking about Christmas, we realize there really is an opportunity for some kind of witness, for good or bad, related to the gospel with almost everything that we do. And that includes our engagement with the consumerist culture. It includes our engagement with all the complexity and the decisions about where to go, where not to go. I mean, let's face it. This world has gone Christmas crazy. I find no other way to describe it. Just look at the traffic outside the mall. Just look at the lawsuits piling up across America about what can be put on the courthouse square and not. Just look at what's happening where, you hear some of the craziest things about how, children and parents are so involved in these Christmas things that, as one parent I read about just last week said, our family goes in as many different directions as there are people during this Christmas season because everyone's in a different concert or in a different program. So this time in which we are supposedly really spending time together as a family means we're actually being pulled apart. How do you say no at Christmas? Now, that's a good question. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Coast to coast and with listeners around the world, this is the Albert Mueller Program.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. This topic is a little lighter than some we discuss in terms of the giant kind of worldview implications. It may seem that way, but when you come down to where Christian families live, this may be more intense than almost anything else. Let me give you a couple of anecdotes. Conversations just over the last few hours and the last few days. I am president of a theological seminary and college. So many wonderful young people and young couples here, young couples often with young children. And I had a young man say to me, who is both husband and father, who said to me, you know, look, we're really strapped. And my parents expect us to come home. And my wife's parents expect us to come home. You're talking about a 2,000-mile trip here. And he was looking at putting something like $1,300 worth of plane tickets on his credit card. He said, we can't afford that. And, I mean, just looking at that whole question, it really does come down to, you know, what is your philosophy of Christmas? Is a philosophy of Christmas an obligation to completely put the family in financial peril in order to make a trip that has to be at that time of the year? I mean, I would hope that the family might take responsibility. In fact, I encourage that husband to take responsibility, to rethink, how do I exert leadership in order to protect my family and to make certain that we don't do something that's irrational just because it's expected of us or perhaps tradition. You know, others are facing all kinds of issues. I heard one account where you had a family that had two different divorces with four different sets of grandparents. I mean, what is your sense of obligation when it comes to Christmas with all of that? What, on the other hand, is your understanding of your responsibility as a Christian for your local church at Christmas? You know, of all the things going on in the local church, whether it's pageants and singing Christmas trees and choir concerts and all the rest, where's the opportunity for the church to make really, really clear that that we know what Christmas is all about? The number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Barb calling from Palmer, Nebraska, listening on KMMJ. What are you thinking about this, Barb?
Hi, Dr. Mohler. I just want to share something a dear friend passed on to me as their family tradition. They kept three gifts because the wise men brought Jesus three gifts, and so in their family, that's how many gifts were under the tree for their kids. And I just thought that was a great thing to pass on, a great way to really focus on what we're here trying to celebrate. And it's also a way to really financially stay in check and not go overboard. I remember as a kid, you know, Mom had tons of presents under the tree, and it just, you know, it lost the meaning of what it was. So it's been a great tradition we've done with our kids also.
Well, that's really helpful, Barb. I appreciate that. Let me give you two things I've heard, just with kind of some background conversation about doing this program. I had several people tell me, look, Christmas was for my family the annual buying season. That's actually when we got clothes for the year. And so it wasn't as if we were getting gifts that were just accessories or things that someone just might want. My parents really used it as the opportunity where we kind of filled the closet with the stuff we were going to need for the next year. And so, you know, when we were growing up, this person said to me, we weren't surprised to open up and have an overcoat for Christmas. You know, the average kid now that opened it up and found an overcoat would think he'd been robbed. Where are the batteries supposed to go and where's the screen on this thing? Because that's just the way a lot of people are. I had someone else talking to me about, the way they handle this. In fact, it was my wife. She mentioned to me that she had come across people who said, you know, we're really going to limit Christmas this year to three gifts. One is, as I recall, and get this right, something you need, something you want, and something that's educational. Now, I guess that could even be reduced to one if what you need and want is an educational toy. But nonetheless, something you need, something you want, something educational. So, you know, in other words, it's not just about what you want and piling up the wish list. I think it's really important for parents to think this through because our kids aren't going to come up with a strategy to suggest to us. We really are responsible as the mother and the father, the husband and the wife, to come up with a strategy for our family. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I really would like to hear from you. And I have been hearing from many who have already been writing to the program. You can always contact us by writing mail at albertmohler.com with questions about Christmas. And it seems to me that about this time in the year, Christians start getting a bit of anxiety. Am I too invested in the consumerist culture? Am I really doing my kids a disservice by treating their wants as needs? Have we as a family come up with a way of exercising Christian stewardship that really does reflect our priorities? Or are we afraid we're going to be embarrassed if our kids don't come out on Christmas Day with the stuff that their friends have? To join the conversation, call 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We'll be right back with your calls on the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 877-8-GOLD-101.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Let me just offer some suggestions, perhaps a framework for thinking about your strategy for celebrating Christmas. Assuming that you have jumped the hurdle, and like most Christians, you will be celebrating Christmas, as I and my family will, let me suggest that you do a gut check. Do you only talk about Jesus in terms of the life of your family at Christmas? If so, that should be a real diagnostic test. In other words, if Christmas is different for you because you talk about Christ at Christmas in a way, even within the life of your family, you do not at other times of the year, that ought to be like a CAT scan saying you've got a major problem as a Christian family. What should distinguish Christmas must not be that all of a sudden we talk like Christians. There ought to be a way in which the reality of Jesus Christ, the earth-shaking, eternity-changing significance of the incarnation of Christ shapes every day. I think a part of that philosophy or strategy means that when we talk to our children, we don't just fall into the habit of repeating the Christmas maxims and the Christmas bromides, but instead say, look, what we're celebrating at Christmas is what has changed all of life for us for eternity. Every day we live is changed, transformed by the reality of what God did for us in Christ. But because we are human beings who forget things so easily, and because celebration is a part of how we should respond to this, we are going to be celebrating at different times of the year certain things that are true not only all of the year, but for all time and for eternity. So I would suggest that a first principle of a Christian strategy should be that we are going to celebrate Christmas as Christians. We're not going to celebrate Christmas as Christians who just celebrate the holiday and decide to talk in Christian terms and to read the Bible story and the infancy and the nativity story. If all of a sudden at Christmas it's the first time you start talking about these things, you have a major problem. But it is entirely proper, I think, and legitimate for a Christian family to say, we are going to, with others, celebrate Christmas as a way of understanding that human beings need structure and pattern. And over the course of the year, different times and different seasons remind us of different truths upon which we base our lives. The second thing is, if you are a family celebrating Christmas, let me suggest that you understand that your responsibility at Christmas for your family and as a family is to honor Christ in all things. And certainly there's something honorable about gathering together with family. Certainly there's something very honorable about celebrating these things together, about reconnecting the family. But that doesn't have to happen at Thanksgiving or at Christmas, for that matter. That could be a matter of sentimentality. If it leads to severe stress, strain, financial ruin for your family, then it's probably something that isn't based in a sound strategy for Christmas. When it comes to gift giving, you know, we all, I think, after Christmas probably feel like we overdid it. And a part of it is just the fact that we live in such a consumerist age. We are driven by so many different things. Not only are we trying to keep up with the Joneses, but perhaps to an even greater extent, we're trying to keep our kids up with the Joneses' kids. When it comes to all of that, obviously setting a financial limit is part of it, but even more than that, I really do think that it is wise for Christian parents to think about what our kids need over the course of the year and that it is probably wise to think about using Christmas not as an opportunity to give them all kinds of things that aren't on the need list, but to help them understand that a part of what we're going to do is give each other, as acts of love, things that we know the other needs. Wants, yes. There's nothing wrong with something like that. But when it comes down to the expectations children will pick up from the larger culture, you've got a real toxic infection there in terms of expectation. I think when it comes to the scheduling of the Christmas holidays, you need to do such things as to say, number one, there are many good things we could do. There are many different directions we could go. There are a lot of wonderful events we can attend. But the church has first and foremost place. We're not going to do anything that would interfere with the priority of Christian worship. We're not going to do anything that would interfere with the priority of Christian stewardship and the priority of Christian witness and the priority of Christian preaching and teaching. So whatever we do, we're not going to supplant all of that for something less. And by the way, I think that is a word of judgment upon churches who sideline preaching and teaching the Word of God and direct evangelism of the gospel during the Christmas season and instead lean into the arts. Let me tell you, it's a lot easier to have a concert than it is to preach and teach the Word of God. And there are an awful lot of churches that simply become a part of the problem rather than a part of the solution by substituting the preaching of the Word, or that is, substituting something else for the preaching of the Word, when that's what people really, really need. Now, I'm not saying you can't have a concert, can't have a choir, can't have a singing Christmas tree. I'm saying if that supplants preaching and the regular worship of God's people, then something is wrong. And if it's true for a local church, it's true for a family as well. You see, I think there are an awful lot of families that all of a sudden panic. Christian families, and I'm really talking to Christians here. Christian families, Christian parents who get to this season, and right about December the 23rd, 24th, 25th, not to mention 26th and 27th, think, boy, we really missed it. We found ourselves, just like the last year, involving ourselves in things we now wish we hadn't, pulled in so many different directions in ways that we now regret, and investing ourselves in terms of gift giving in ways that really do not reflect the priorities of this family. So what am I suggesting? I'm suggesting that Mom and Dad, you take some quality time, perhaps even over this weekend, to have a good conversation. As Christians, you know, what is it we want for our family? How are we going to maximize that? Here are the expectations put upon us by others. Here are the kinds of traditions and habits we bring. These are the kinds of customs with which we are familiar. But where is our strategy? What is our philosophy for celebrating Christmas? And you better do it before the whole thing gets out from under you and you find yourselves wondering what happened to the time. And then I want to make a further suggestion. Help your children to understand by extending this conversation after you as parents have come to a mind to them. Tell them, this is who we are as Christians, this is who we are as a Christian family, and this is why we celebrate Christmas this way. Now your friends, even some of our relatives, all kinds of people around you, even some of the other folks we know at church may celebrate Christmas differently. But this is the way we do it. All things to God's glory. Ultimately, the criterion for the celebration of Christmas shouldn't be anything less than how did we celebrate and how do we maximize the glory of God in this fallen world in the midst of this joyous season. We'll be back in just a moment with the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back. Very quickly, we're going to go to Philip, listening on WFIA in Louisville, Kentucky. Go ahead, Philip.
Yeah, Dr. Mueller, I was going to ask, I'm married, I'm a young couple. I was wondering how we can evangelize to my unsaved family on Christmas through our actions and our gifts.
Well, that's a great question, Philip. I think one of the things you can always do is talk very openly about just what we were talking about here. You know, what's your philosophy and strategy for Christmas? You can make very clear, you know, we're making our decisions, family, by what we believe will most honor Christ. And, you know, as the Lord gives you opportunity for direct witness to the gospel, you know, Philip, I appreciate your courage and determination to take that. But I think when it comes to gift giving, I think one of the things you can do is just make certain that that you don't withhold gifts from non-Christian family members. That would send a very strange signal, but rather say, you know, I'm giving you this, but boy, there's a whole lot more I wish I could give you. This is something that that may please you for some time. But as the Lord gives you opportunity, I would say winsome witness within your family first, and let people see the joy of Christ in you, in your spouse, and your children, and Philip, as you and your wife and your children show that love. As you make very clear in your scheduling with your priority of being in church and Christian witness, as you make very clear that you're doing this in the name of Christ. I mean, I think that's something that people forget right out of the Gospels, that whatever we do, we should do all these things in the name of Christ. That makes it very different than saying, hey, this is Christmas, and so I'm giving you a gift. But rather, I'm doing this in the name of Christ. You know, there's no earthly gift I could give you that can match the gift that God gave us in Christ. Philip, thanks for that call. We'll continue this line of thought as we go forward, because I can just tell you from the email volume, there are a lot of people who find this kind of situation perplexing. We don't do Christian counseling on this program. Instead, we try to counsel each other about how we should think as Christians, and especially when it comes to the family, and as I mentioned already, to the local church. There are some big challenges along those lines when it comes to Christmas. Today is, of course, December 7, 2007, 66 years after December 7, 1941, as Franklin Delano Roosevelt, then President of the United States, said, a day that will live in infamy. It is interesting that if you are younger than 66, there's no way you were alive when Pearl Harbor happened. Roughly 1,000 World War II vets dying every single day. We're looking at a huge generational transition here, but let's remember that we're having this conversation in December 7, 2007, because of a generation of courageous Americans who were willing to meet the challenge presented to them 66 years ago. Christmas 1941 looked very different than what we're anticipating this year. That was made clear just in Ken Burns' special, The War, in recent days. One of the things we should think of in that line is indebtedness. Back next week to join you for Intelligent Christian Conversation. This is the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmueller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmueller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.